Owen Dalton recently bought a farm in West Cork and has turned it into a rich space for nature. What can farmers learn from his approach? In Farming for Nature this week, we hear Owen's story, which he recently turned into a book, An Irish Atlantic Rainforest. Owen, you set aside 24 acres of your farm for rewilding and creating a wet temperate forest to thrive. Before we go into that, you might just briefly describe your overall farm and farming system for us.
Sure. So the farm that I bought down in near Irees in on the Bear Peninsula in West Cork, it was, and it is, 33 acres of non-shared ground and 40 acres of a share of commonage. So the first thing I did was a lot of the land had the non-commonage part of the land had developed into wild natural forest over many decades of being very little used for farming. So the fact that there were no or very few livestock to eat the regenerating tree seedlings and so on allowed forest to spread out into the land. So the first thing I did was apply for a native woodland scheme grant, because the forest was in a very bad ecological state because it was being severely overgrazed by feral goats and sika deer, which were preventing the forest from regenerating naturally. They were also stripping out all of the ground flora, so all of the really rich diversity of wildflowers and so on that you'd normally associate with a native forest, that was all completely missing. And they were killing a lot of the trees by stripping the bark off. And all of this severe overgrazing was also creating the perfect conditions for invasion by a whole host of invasive non-native plant species, the worst of which was rhododendron ponticum. So the first thing I did was apply for this grant, and all I asked them to fund was the erection of a deer fence to keep out the goats and the deer. And that went up around 21 and a half acres of the farm. Mm-hmm. And that area, I would consider what I'm doing there ever since as rewilding, because it's been practically not used at all in for farming ever since. Now, recently, as in last winter, I have a small herd of Dexter cattle, and I put them in there for several weeks last winter. Because after getting on for 12 years of no herbivore presence in there, I felt that the place might benefit ecologically from the disturbance of their hooves and so on. But I still consider that to be rewilding. It's not, as I say, it's not used for farming in any sense. It's really just left purely for nature. On the other side of the main road, because there's the main road from Castletown Bear to Kenmare divides the farm, the non-commonage part of the farm, in two. So we have land on the upper side of the main road as well. And there's been a slightly different thing going on, but the results are quite similar. There was much less forest on that side of the road. And that wasn't under the native woodland scheme. I'm kind of doing something similar there, in that I put the Dexters in there for a couple of months over the winter. And the reason, again, why I do that in the winter is because that's the period when the trees and other flora are all dormant. So that most of the trees have lost their leaves. Most of the flora has yet to come out in the spring. And so having the Dexters in there doesn't in any way impede the natural regeneration of wild native trees, which is occurring throughout that 8.5 acres as well. So I consider what I'm doing there to be high nature value farming. And the results in both areas where I'm practicing what I call rewilding and high nature value farming, the results have been incredibly positive for wild nature, with, you know, trees springing up all over the place, wild self-seeded trees going on to form new native forest. Or, as I discovered a couple of years after moving to Beira and buying the farm in 2009, what I have here is actually temperate rainforest. So you've got the creation of the spontaneous creation of wild native temperate rainforest throughout the farm. And all it took, it requires very, very little from me. All I need to do is to make sure that it's not overgrazed by deer or whatever else, or you know, that I don't keep livestock, too many livestock in there for too much of the year.
Mm-hmm. So you've rewilded part of your farm, and that's a wet temperate Atlantic forest. Can you explain that habitat for those of us who haven't had the luck to visit these forests? And are there many left in Ireland?
For sure. Unfortunately, there's very, very little temperate rainforest left in Ireland. It's estimated that in prehistory, before the advent of farming in Ireland, around 80% of this island would have been covered in forest of one sort or another. And a lot of that would have been rainforest, for the simple reason that obviously we get very high levels of rain here in Ireland, particularly along the west coast. But most of the island has rainfall levels, and not just rain, but other forms of precipitation like mist and fog, and, you know, all of that helps. And the way that you know that it's rainforest is the presence of what are called epiphytes. Mm-hmm. So epiphytes are plants that grow on other plants, generally trees. So if you go into a forest and you see that the branches of the trees are covered in mosses and ferns growing on the branches, those are all epiphytic growths. They're things that grow on the trees. They don't take anything from the trees. They use them purely as a substrate on which to grow. And they are the defining element of rainforest anywhere in the world, really. I mean, if you go into a tropical rainforest or a cloud forest, you'll find epiphytes there too. And we have our own rainforest. They're temperate rainforests.
Mm-hmm.
But the sad part of it is that from an original around 80% of our island, we've gone from that down to around 1% of native forest. So when we talk about forest in Ireland, we need to exclude monoculture plantation forestry, because those are not natural ecosystems. They are just crops of timber is all they are. And they're virtually useless for biodiversity. And as bad as that sounds, that we're down to only around 1%, it's actually far, far worse than that, because most of that 1% is completely and utterly wrecked. So what do I mean by that? Well, essentially, the scenario that I described here in my own forest when I arrived, i.e. completely severely overgrazed and being overwhelmed by non-native invasive plant species like rhododendron, you'll find exactly the same situation in the vast majority of the tiny remaining remnants of native forest that we have left. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you go to the biggest and most important on the whole island of them, which is Killarney National Park, the place is completely trashed. So over most of the park, there's no regeneration of native tree seedlings whatsoever. and rhododendron completely dominates vast areas of the forests in the park.
So for you, I mean, the rhetoric out there would be that kind of rewilding could be, it's not pure abandonment. There's actually a lot of management involved to get the woodland working to its optimum. So what management did you do, and then kind of the results that you saw out of that?
So the management that I carry out is pretty minimal. The first thing, obviously, as I mentioned, was excluding the goats and deer. And then the other thing was getting rid of the rhododendron and the other invasive plant species. There is one other thing that I do, which is that in the complete absence of grazing or browsing for most of the year, briars or brambles can, there is a risk that they will take over. So I do sometimes cut them back a little bit here and there, but in a fairly relaxed way. It's not something that I need to spend much time doing because I'm not trying to get rid of it. Brambles are a really important plant for wildlife and for nature. So you want to have plenty of it. You just don't want it taking over the whole place. But what just to finish that point, you said that rewilding, it's not this idea of walking away from land. I think that's a misconception. Well, it is and it isn't. What I would say is that you're generally, if you're trying to rewild a piece of land, you're working with a situation that is completely out of sync ecologically for due to human impacts. So, for example, it's completely unnatural to have the kind of extremely high densities of deer and the likes of Sika deer and feral goats. They've been introduced from other parts of the world, so they're invasive species themselves. Their presence is completely unnatural, but more importantly, the densities that they reach is completely unnatural because there's nothing to control them. There's nothing in a natural ecosystem. You would have a suite of predators that would regulate the numbers of herbivores, and even more importantly, they'd regulate their behavior. So what does that mean? It means that when herbivores are aware that there are predators abroad, they tend to be much more wary and nervous and skittish, and they will avoid certain areas where they sense that there's more danger of being hunted. And that allows the native vegetation to flourish in those areas and for pockets of wild native woodland and other habitats to form in Killarney National Park or most other pieces of woodland where deer densities are extremely high. That is a completely unnatural situation. It's also completely unnatural to have something like rhododendron taking advantage of that. That was brought here by people. So these are human impacts. So when you talk about rewilding being, you're right that it doesn't mean walking away from land, but it does mean it means working to limit the impacts of human impositions on that land or and on the surrounding landscapes. If that makes sense. And then just standing back and letting the rest of everything in the place just get on with it.
Rewilding, it's quite a fiery topic in, say, the media. In your opinion, what's the best way forward that allows us to get the best out of rewilding, but not allowing it to drive a kind of a greater wedge, maybe between environmentalists and farmers or between urban and rural dwellers? What do you feel is the best way for rewilding?
We need to place any discussion of that in the context of the fact that we are hemorrhaging nature on in Ireland and in most parts of the world that's happening. We're losing nature at an absolutely terrifying rate. And Nature isn't just something that's nice. It's not just something that, that you look out at through your window and say, oh, there's a goldfinch, isn't that lovely or whatever. It's absolutely essential to human survival and well-being on so many layers. But we'd need to do a separate podcast on that. But that does need to be understood, that nature is not a luxury. In the same way as you can say that food, for example, is not a luxury, nature is not a luxury either. And we need to place our discussion of this subject, such as rewilding, in that context. The second thing I'd say is that if we are serious about reversing the collapse of nature in Ireland and elsewhere, then rewilding is what we need to be talking about, because that is the main tool that we have to not just stop the collapse of nature, but to actually reverse it. What all our species need, all our wild native species that we're losing so quickly, what they need above all else is habitat. And that's what rewilding is all about. It's about allowing wild native habitat to reform. Now, I think it's absolutely essential, having said all that the steps that we take to change things and to encourage rewilding in Ireland, it all has to happen in a way that's completely fair to farmers. If we don't have farmers and rural communities on board and engaged with the idea of rewilding, I think that'll backfire and it'll have the opposite effect. Farmers should have the option of continuing to receive farm payments at the same levels that they do for farming their land, for not farming their land, for rewilding, for doing what I've done in my place.
What do you feel is the relationship between rewilding and food security?
Well, let's take an example of where I am in the Bear Peninsula. For a start, pretty much all farmers in a place like this, none of them make a living purely from farming, or none of us, I should say, because the land is too poor. Holdings are generally too small, so everybody has to have some other activity, whether it's a little shop or maybe they have a trade or whatever else. Everybody has to do something alongside the farming. So the farming is a part-time activity. And the kind of farming that's practiced in a place like this, a lot of it, for example, is sheep farming. Now, you take, for example, our mountain commonage. It's several hundred acres of very poor rocky ground, where the only thing that grows there is what they call around here Fingal grass, which is Melinia or purple moor grass. It's a very coarse grass, and that kind of ground can support very, very few sheep. So essentially, but that mountain would be incredibly biodiverse, rich rainforest, were it not for that tiny handful of sheep. Factor in also the fact that the sheep are fed on their supplementary fed with large quantities of sheep nuts and very often hay as well. And it's questionable whether, in terms of food calories, whether that mountain is producing anything in terms of food. But above all, you have to factor in also, you have to look at what are called the ecological and carbon opportunity costs. So if that mountain was wild native rainforest, that would be sucking down huge amounts of carbon. It would be a very rich habitat for for a lot of the wildlife that we're losing so quickly. We're foregoing all that for the sake of a tiny handful of sheep, which in terms of calories may not be may there may not be a net calorie gain at all when as I say, when you factor in all of the sheep nuts and all of the rest of it. Given the fact that we are in a global ecological and climate emergency, and the Irish government was one of the first governments in the world to sign up for that, to declare that in 2019. So, there's no debating the situation. There's no debating how bad things are. And I think we need to act on that. We can't just say, well, okay, let's declare a climate and an ecological emergency and then carry on pretending as if that wasn't the case. We need to start making the kind of changes that are required to turn those things around.
Rewilding is considered an easy option for offsetting, especially maybe along the west coast of Ireland. And should we be concerned about who's owning Ireland as such and maintaining maybe a sense of control over that and our communities? Or should we just anything goes because we need all the help we can get? What do you feel about that?
Well, I think that's an excellent question. And my own opinion on my own view on that is that yes, that's a very real danger. I think that, there's no doubt that change is coming, because we can't continue on in the direction we're going in. But that change has to happen in a way that works for rural communities and for farmers. And there's a very serious danger, for example, that it becomes the way land is used becomes attractive to investors, i.e., people who have no attachment to the local community in any way. And obviously, I myself am a blow-in where I live. I've been here for getting on for 14 years, so I mean, I'll always be a blow-in here. My sons aren't, but I am. But I live here is the point. And I go to the local shops, I go to the local pub, I'm engaged with the community. If you have people who are buying up vast swathes of remote rural locations in Ireland as an investment opportunity and have no interaction or they're not part of the community that in any way that lives in that place. I think that would be extremely harmful and something that we really need to avoid. And I think that we can do that if we're clever about how we institute these kind of changes. And what I'd say is, it wouldn't be difficult to have a clause in giving farmers the option to rewild their land, that it's this isn't something that they have to be living in the area, they have to be living nearby, rather than, and that wouldn't be difficult to kind of, to just have that as part of the whole thing.
What would you say to conventional farmers that are considering a kind of a more ecosystems-based approach but haven't made the jump yet?
I think every farmer has to weigh up for him or herself what's right for them. From a financial point of view, as things stand, it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense for people to start trying to for most people to start trying to well, certainly not to rewild, and even high nature value farming, there may be situations in which they can make it work and it and pay at the same time. I'd be doubtful, but there are other sides to consider, of course. If you feel strongly about what's happening to nature in Ireland, and you feel that you want to play a part in doing what you can to reverse that trend, then what I've found is that the rewards, while not monetary or financial, they've been absolutely enormous in senses that really can't be counted in any way other than in the joy that you get from seeing wild nature come flooding back into a piece of land. And all of the all of the connections between all of the various different types of nature as they start to reform. It's just wonderful to witness and to play a part in.
Where would you start advising another farmer if they want to start putting together a plan for rewilding their land? What are the main things to consider?
Can you afford to do this? Because it means, you know, giving up a significant amount of income. So that's the first thing to consider. Every piece of land and every farm is going to be different. So, you know, the conditions pertaining in any one place, for example, my place, are going to be very different, maybe even if, you know, a half a mile down the road. Start looking at what you have left on your farm. Do you have any pieces of wetland or pockets of wild native forest left on your farm? And if you do, I'd focus on those to begin with. I'd be looking at how they can be A, protected, and B, expanded, if there's a way of allowing those bits of habitat to expand out. I'd be avoiding doing things like planting trees. I think we need to get over this idea that nature needs us to kind of instate it. Nature is perfectly capable of doing its own thing once we get out of the way, is my experience.
Oh, and for you, how does it make you feel? Or do you have one memory that stands out when you kind of look at this thriving woodland of, you know, lichens and liverworts and fungi? Is there one memory that stands out for you that you feel very proud of what you have achieved on your farm?
There honestly isn't, Bridget, and I'm not trying to avoid the question, because I could start naming moments and I wouldn't stop, you know. And there isn't really any particular one. I mean, I could talk about the first time I saw an otter in one of the streams, or, you know, the first time I started to realize that pine martens had moved back in, or the first time I saw a pine marten, or when lesser horseshoe bats showed up. Even after nearly 14 years, there isn't a time that I go in there that I don't find something new or experience something new. It's to name one or two instances, it becomes very difficult.
It's like picking a favorite child. Yeah,
exactly. And I find it's not really about that. It's more about those little, it's about the constant regular witnessing of nature doing its own thing that I find so rewarding.
Owen Dalton, thanks for being my guest today.
An absolute pleasure, Bridget. Thank you.
Thanks to Owen. We'll be back soon with another pod. Meanwhile, contact me on info@farmingfornature.ie, and please rate, review, and share this podcast.